My wife's brother was down for a visit this week, so we had company all week, and I have a six-year-old nephew who is a question asker, and I don't know about you, but I'm not real good at waking up. It's not one of the stronger attributes that I have, and I got up Monday morning to a light tapping at the door before I even had coffee, and I open it, and he comes in, and I poured myself a cup of coffee, and he was right there in front of me. Question. Go, wait. I have a question for you. Going, yeah. I go, do you know what grumpy is? And he's going, I'm not sure. I go, you know when your mom wakes you up and you don't want to wake up and you just want her to be quiet and leave you alone? He goes, oh, yeah, I know. I go, I'm just a grumpy old man until I have two cups of coffee. And so I said, okay. And he occupied himself, and I didn't even realize he was watching me. I took the last sip of my second cup of coffee, and he's right there in my face. Can we talk now? And I'm going, yeah, we can talk now. He's going, you know, I saw the movie Grumpy Old Men, but they were funny. And I'm going, well, I'm sorry I'm not funny. But, you know, and then every day he'd come in, go, he'd peek in the door, he'd go, have you had your coffee yet? And Mom woke him up from a nap that week. He said, I'm grumpy. Don't talk to me. You know, so they can't say I didn't teach him anything. All right. We need help in children's church. You know, as a vision for a church, it's pretty simple. I always think of us as a military base of operation, because a base of operation has everything in it, from food to hospitals to, you know, every aspect of life has to be taken care of, and every need has to be met in that setting. And plus, its purpose is to be a place from which you launch out and a place to attack from. And from here, we've impacted Mexico and Romania and all over the world. Right now, for second service, we need two people in Children's Church. Third service, we need three people. Fourth service, we need five. And on Wednesday nights, we need two people. Fourth service is critical. If by next week we don't have five, the week after that, we're going to shut down Children's Church. The core of us being a operating base is Sunday morning services. We do not have Sunday school. We have Children's Church. We're one generation away from extinction of Christianity. We need to train them and raise them up in the Lord. And I don't know about you, but there's something about reaching Romania and Mexico and not having enough for our own kids that doesn't sit right with me. And I hope it doesn't sit right with you, that it bothers you enough to pray about it and pray for servants to rise up. And if you are called, to sign up and to start serving and helping out. You know, there's more to just having Sunday school classes. We have security issues, a lot of things. We really need two men in the hallway. We have kids that have to go to the bathroom and things, and if there's only one, he can be occupied while something else goes on. We don't want any of your kids getting away from us while we're here. I had a Sunday that got a call, had to run down to Children's Church, was on a different property, and we had parents without any children to give back. And for 4 hours, trying to figure out what happened. Longest, worst 4 hours of my life. You know, I have two parents sitting there going, we dropped our kids off. You don't have them. Where are they? And I didn't know. It turned out it was a frequent practice of these two families that they would take each other's kids and give the other family the afternoon just as a couple to go out and have breakfast or whatever after church. And they had just forgotten to communicate, and the other family had taken them, and we eventually found them. But I've never forgotten that day. We have had one night when, in a very ugly divorce situation, a woman showed up with about five guys, and they were just going to go into the children's church and take the kids. And it just corresponded where we just happened to have five guys, all well over 6 feet tall, most over 200 pounds, standing in front of the door of the children's church when they pulled up. And she jumped out of the car, and she couldn't get her five guys out of the car to come. And so they drove off. But We need security. We need to keep your kids safe and teach them. And if it's not safe, we shut it down. It's just that simple. If I walk through and I don't see enough help, we close it down. So that would mean those who have children who come to Fourth Service are going to have to come to Second or Third. We just won't have Children's Church at Fourth and won't be able to have kids. But I don't think that's the right thing to do. I think the right thing to do is that four or five people would come forward, and Wednesday nights also. So pray for more people to come forward, and I hope you feel sufficiently guilty. That was my intent, and if we don't get enough help, I will be grumpy. So, no, do not sign up out of guilt, because you will simply quit in a month or two. Pray about it. You need to be devoted to it. But we need those of you who will devote yourselves to help us out. Chapter 31 of Genesis, we need to move quickly today. Chapter 31, let's pray. God, we ask that you speak to our hearts today. Minister to us, Lord. Help us to take the lessons and put them into practice. In Jesus' name, amen. We saw how Jacob was ripped off by his uncle Laban for an extra 7 years by pulling the swap with Leah and Rachel and forcing him into a relationship, of a bigamous relationship. Last week we saw all the strife in that household, him literally ending up with four wives, having all the kids, just craziness in that household. And 6 years has now passed by. And it's getting near the time when this contract that he had made with Laban, and they made a deal. He told Laban, look, you take all the spotted, speckled, and brown, and all these out of the flock and leave nothing but solid color, and these will be my wages. Anything born out of these solid-colored animals that is spotted or speckled or brown will be mine. Anything that's solid-colored will be yours. And if you remember, Uncle Laban said, oh, that it would be so. What a deal, man. You're gonna come out of this with a little tiny flock. Mine's going to get huge. And he just saw another opportunity to rip him off again. But as it turns out, Jacob had a dream we're going to find out about. And so let's move in, because we're at that point where 6 years are up. The contract isn't quite fulfilled yet. It was for 7 years. But now in verse 1, Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has acquired all his wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable towards him as before. The Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers, to your family, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock. And he said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it's not favorable towards me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father, yet your father has deceived me and has changed my wages 10 times. And God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and I saw in a dream. And behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were speckled, were streaked, speckled, and spotted, and gray spotted. Now, we know the animals were solid colored, yet Jacob had saw in a dream, and what he saw in the dream, God was telling him genetically it's in them to have this type of offspring, and he saw it. So the angel of the Lord spoke to him in the dream and said, Jacob, and Jacob said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see all the rams which leap upon the flocks that are streaked, speckled, and gray and spotted, for I have seen what Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, return to the land of your family. Then Rachel and Leah answered him. Suspense, right? There's been strife in this household. Are they with him? Are they going to go along? Jacob's called his two wives out and saying, you've been here, you've been watching. And now the answer from Rachel and Leah, they answered and said, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he sold us. He's completely consumed our money. For all the riches which God has taken from our father is really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. Wonderful to have the support of your wife or wives. Hopefully you just have a wife. But, you know, they were with him. They had watched. In 7 years, their respect for Laban had gone to zero. Their respect for Jacob had gone through the ceiling. They watched him, a man of integrity, for actually 20 years now. They had watched their father trying to rip him off over and over and over again, changing his wages 10 times. We're going to come across some numbers here that are interesting to me because we come across it's the 6th year of service. And in God's economy, when we get over to the law of God later in the Bible, you'll see that 6 is the number of completion of service, not 7. We also come across the number 7. It will take 7 days for Laban to catch him. We come across the number 3, a 3-day head start, and the number 10. These numbers are interesting because 3 is the number for God, 6 the number for complete service, 7 for perfect, 10 for complete and perfect. Those numbers all carry those meaning to them. You could say that God saw Jacob's service as complete and perfect and completely fulfilled to Laban. Jacob was reluctant to be the one to break the contract. He knew full well by now. He had heard rumors. You know, when people turn against you, you feel it. And then you hear it. It was getting back to him what they were saying. They looked and their whole inheritance was getting lost. And they were angry about it. And then Laban was getting angry about it. His countenance was just different toward him. And he knew that they were not going to keep their bargain. He knew that they, you know, possibly even kill him. Who knows what they would do. But he saw what was coming. But he had another year to go. And so the Lord spoke to him and said, go now. And so, you know, envy. Believe me, if God blesses you with success in anything, be it money or ministry, that which should cause people to glorify God will cause some to envy and hate you. You know, it's a strange thing. There was a time when God just opened up doors of opportunity for me teaching. And it was a wonderful time. It was exciting. And I got to start speaking at retreats. And I was just literally going 7 days a week nonstop. And somewhere every weekend and getting to fly around the world. And, you know, some people got an attitude, made comments to me about, well, you're quite the jet setter. You're never home anymore. And da, da, da. Jet setter. What do they think I did? Go to Europe on a vacation? You know, the first 3 trips I went, one day, a couple came and picked me up and made me go sightseeing. And I saw John the Baptist's finger. And the city of Cologne with ugly kids with spiked hair giving me dirty looks because I had long hair, I guess. I don't know. And we went into this old cathedral and looked at it and drove home. All those 3 trips, that's the only thing I saw besides the inside of the room where I was ministering. I went over there to be with the people and to serve. And I was there ministering around the clock. And yet people think I was just running around Europe. You know, they get that attitude. If God blesses you with anything, there are people that look at you and you know, glorify God when God blesses. But here's Laban. He's doing everything he can to rip him off. And believe me, all the Uncle Labans in this world, they really do believe they are the ones who are unjustly treated, that life just isn't fair to them. They believe their own lies. This guy was a con man to the core. He changed his wages 10 times on them. Every time he would go out, he'd say, oh, they're all spotted. He's going, okay, well, now all the spotted from now on will be mine. As soon as he would say that, they would start having streaked animals. Okay, well, now all the streaked animals. And he did that 10 times. Every time he did it, God changed it. Jacob's running around with his stupid sticks doing stuff, and it didn't make any difference, you know? What made the difference was God saw what Laban was doing. And Laban reaped what he sowed. He stole 20 years of Jacob's life. And when Jacob would leave, he would leave Laban with virtually nothing. And so watch out for envy in your heart. When the angel of the Lord spoke to him, God said, go. So he speaks to his wife and his wives, and they are completely with him. You know, they saw that Laban had, he would have left them homeless even. He didn't care about, there was only one person in Laban's world, and that was Laban. He could care less about anybody else, and I'm sure you all know somebody that way. That the only thing that matters to them is what happens to them. They seem to think the whole world revolves around them, and that everything should belong to them, and if, you know, any injustice or, you know, the normal hardships that everybody goes to, but for them, it's some horrible, hey, we all have tough things we go through. And you're not the only person to go through it. You know, but there's those people like Laban that are egocentric, that are lost within a world filled with mirrors, that only see their own wealth and their own well-being. That's all that matters to him. Even his own daughters were just pawns to use because he was prospering because of Jacob. And remember his language, oh, the Lord has blessed me because of you. Now listen to the next. In verse 17, Jacob rose and set his sons and wives on camels and carried away all his livestock and his possessions which he had gained and acquired, livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. And Laban had gone to shear sheep. So this was a good time to leave. Laban was busy. And Rachel had stolen the household idols or gods that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled, and all that he had, he rose and crossed the river, which would be the Euphrates, where in that area there are several places where it's small enough and shallow enough to ford the river. So he crossed it and headed towards the mountains of Gilead. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. So he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, be careful what you speak, that you speak to Jacob, neither good or bad. Now, Laban, you know, gets word 3 days later. Now, I know Jacob sheared his sheep before he left. So he simply seemed industrious, got busy. It was the time of shearing. He would not have left because sheep, when they need shearing, are 30, 40 pounds heavier. And if you've ever seen them when they get sheared, they literally leap for joy. They don't like it when the shearer has a hold of them and is cutting everything off, okay? But once they, I'm not kidding, I watched a whole flock of sheep get sheared one time, and it was a fascinating process as they'd bring them in and pin their legs and just in a few swipes, man, and they would be out there and literally, you know, tons of wool coming off of these sheep, and they were just bouncing around the field after that. You know, it's that way for us sometimes, isn't it? We just get loaded down with things. God pins us and starts shearing us, and we think something horrible is happening, but all of a sudden we find a weight is gone, and it's just all right, you know? And God has to we keep picking stuff up. You know, we're like sheep. Wool just gets thicker and thicker, and God every now and then just has to go in and trim it down. Or he says we're like grapes. He has to trim us back and keep us to the place where we're fruitful. Now, Rachel stealing the household gods. Laban, oh, the Lord has blessed me. Yet his house was filled with idols. He was a man who was a fraud. Rachel, I believe, was a believer who was compromised. But Laban, he didn't believe in God. He would use it around Jacob. I don't even know if he believed in his household idols. I don't know if he believed in anything but Laban. But he had all these idols. You could call them today good luck charms, superstitions, but you would have all different gods for different things by what you chose. You know, if you wanted prosperity, you would, you know, purchase a certain god and set it up in your house and do some kind of obeisance to it and so on and different. And apparently he had several of these, and Rachel went in and stole them. Now, Rachel kind of speaks to us as a believer who comes to Christ but doesn't want to let go of their old ways. They might even have some superstitions that they still hang on to, but it really kind of speaks of where God says, come out from among them and be separate, and the people that won't. You know, the worst place to be as a Christian is on the fence, is when you try to have it both ways. When you try to hang on to the world and hang on to the Lord, you have enough of the Lord to make you feel guilty about what you're doing in the world, and too much of the world to have any joy in the Lord, and you're left with just misery. You know, go for it in the Lord. Let go of the world and have the joy of God by having a clean heart and a clean conscience. And, you know, turn away from those things that defile you with guilt. So Laban rises up, overtakes him with his brethren. This was an armed attack. He was going after Jacob. But the language is so, you know, phony. I mean, this guy pursues him and overtakes. Remember, he had a 3-day head start. Now, he would have been traveling considerably slower, considering the size of the herds and everything that he had to move, than a few armed men could move. So Laban could overtake him, but, you know, it takes him that time. He catches up with him, but God tells him, watch out what you do. So Laban, now in verse 25, overtook Jacob. Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban, with his brethren, pitched their tents in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For my might have sent you away with joy and songs and timbrel and harps. I would have thrown a party for you. That's why I brought armed men with me to kill you. Why, you know what? Have you ever had somebody this two-faced with you? Oh, bro, man, I just appreciate you so much. And they're stabbing you in the back while they're talking to you. And I've had some people where I've just said, like, oh, John, it's so good to see you. And I go, you know, that's funny, because I was talking to so-and-so the other day, and they said that you just told them this and that about me. Is that true? And their faces just drop. I don't like pretense. And if I run into it, I call it. You know, if the other person was lying to me, I want to find out. You know, let's get things set straight. You know, you just told them that you think I'm an overbearing creep, and now you see me and you tell me you think, you know, you missed me. You missed an overbearing creep? I don't get it. You know, what's true here? And I'm not kidding. I've just had people just turn red and turn around and walk away. Don't be two-faced. You know what? If you don't like somebody, just tell them you don't like them. I'd rather somebody tell me, I don't want you around. I'll just leave. You know, I don't go where I'm not wanted. But to have somebody, oh, man, it's just so good to have you around here, John. They're having meetings discussing how to get rid of me at the same time. And I knew it. Two-faced. I don't like it. And here's Laban. Oh, we would have thrown a party for you. What a liar. But you didn't allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Oh, poor me. I didn't get to kiss my daughters goodbye. He sold his daughters. He could care less about them. You know, and now you have done foolishly in so doing. It's in my power to harm you. Look at man, I brought man, I can do you harm. But God, the God of your father, spoke to me last night and said I couldn't, more or less what he said. You know what he's saying here? I could kill you, but God won't let me. He warned me. But you know what? He couldn't kill him. If he would have tried, God would have struck him down. He thought he had power to do him harm, but he didn't. If God be for you, nobody can be against you. You know, Jacob had a clean conscience, and yet this man is there with his accusing tone. It's in my power to harm you. God spoke to me, saying, be careful how you treat Jacob. Verse 30, you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods? And Jacob answered and said to Laban, I was afraid that perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. And with whomever you find your gods, do not let him live in the presence of our brother. Identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob didn't know that Rachel had stolen them. When you're angry, be careful what you say. Okay? He was mad. And he said, if somebody in my group stole your gods, wherever you find them, kill. He didn't know it was Rachel. If he'd known that, he never would have said this. And you know what? The death penalty for stealing is inappropriate. He's overstating his case. He's indignant here, and I don't blame him for being indignant. But even then, control your tongue. He put Rachel at great risk. And Laban went Jacob's tent, Leah's tent, into the two maids' tents, but he didn't find them. He entered Rachel's tent. In verse 34, Rachel had taken the household gods and put them in a camel's saddle and sat on them. And Laban searched about the tent but didn't find them. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord, but I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me. And she was pretty quick thinking and figured out a way to not get up. So he searched and didn't find them. So 5 days he overtakes them, threatens Jacob. And in verse 36, Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before me and my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us. These 20 years I have been with you, and your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried. Their young I have not eaten, the rams of your flock, that which was torn by beast I did not bring to you, I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or by night. There I was in the day of drought, consumed me in the frost of night, my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I've served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. And unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and my labor of my hands and rebuked you. So there. I have served you with integrity above and beyond what is expected. I replaced what was killed by beast with my own stock. I didn't take one thing that was yours. He didn't know his wife had stolen. How sad. Here is a man of integrity who could stand in his integrity and say, I have served perfectly. If he had only known the stain that had been brought into his household, the blemish on his integrity by Rachel, how sad. It would have silenced him here. Wives, you know you can be a great honor to your husband or a great shame. And your husbands can be that to your wives. You know, we need to be men and women like Jacob here. Serve with integrity, with all your heart. And so he rebukes him, and he's angry. And so Laban answered in verse 43 to Jacob and said, these daughters are my daughters. These children are my children. This flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these, my daughters and their children whom they have born? Now, therefore, come, let us make a covenant, you and I. Let it be a witness between you and me. So Jacob put up a stone as a pillar. And Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they ate there on the heap. And Laban called it Jagar Shadutha, which means a heap of witness. Jacob called it Gilad, which means a heap of witness. And Laban said, this heap of witness be between you and me this day. Therefore, its name was called Gilad, also Mizpah, because he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us. See, God is witness between you and me. Then Laban goes on and says more to Jacob, and this heap, and here this pillar which I have placed between you and me, this heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness that I will not pass beyond this heap to you. You will not pass beyond this heap of this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor and the God of their father judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of Isaac. And Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread, and they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. Early in the morning, Laban arose, kissed his sons and daughters, blessed them. Then Laban departed, returned to his place. He had no choice. God gave him no choice. So a boundary is now set up. A line has been drawn. We won't pass it. I want you to notice that Laban, who didn't fear God, swore by the Lord. Jacob, who knew Laban didn't fear God, swore by the fear of Isaac. He picked on something that he knew. Here was going on in Laban's mind. Jacob's going to get home. Abraham had become great and mighty, and he gave it all to Isaac. I have a lot of servants, armed servants, capable of taking care of themselves. And in fact, once Jacob got home with all of his servants, they would have sufficient army to come back and wipe them out. And so Laban says, well, we'll set up a witness here between us. Even though everything here is mine, I'm going to let you go, but we won't cross this line to harm each other. And then he accuses him. He says, if you afflict, you beat my daughters or do anything, well, how dare him? You know, I would be so tempted to punch this guy. Wouldn't you? I mean, those kind of acts, don't take more wives. He didn't take any wives. He was forced into bigamy by Laban. Laban had done all of this to him, and now he's accusing him of not treating his wives right. That he's going to somehow, you know, God will see if you do this and that. I don't know about you, but when somebody comes up with accusations like that, you know what to do? Bite your tongue. Do like Jacob. Just smile at him. Because you know the integrity of your own heart. People can say what they will about you. I've served with some who wanted to get rid of me. And served in my integrity. And was able to leave with my integrity intact. Because I didn't do tit for tat. That's something from the 1940s, isn't it? For you youngsters, that means I didn't strike back when I was struck. I didn't render evil for evil. But rendered good for evil. Bless them who despitefully use you. Have you been used? Have you been betrayed? I have. And you know what? Sometimes all you can do is walk away. There are some people you simply cannot reconcile with because they are your active enemy and they will not change. I feel no obligation to try to reconcile with an active enemy. I feel every obligation to forgive them and go on with my life and not wish them harm and pray for God to bless them and bring them to repentance, but harbor no ill will in my heart and move on. But I don't feel like I need to chase down everybody that hates me and try to make them like me and try to reconcile. You know, reconcile, to forgive somebody is to not harbor anger, and it's to forgive. But to reconcile means you both come to see it the same way. And if you've ever argued with your spouse and then reconciled, you know that usually the thing you argued about, both of you saw it wrong a little bit, and both of you had to come to a mutual place where you said, yeah, this is what really happened. That's when you're reconciled. You see, when we're reconciled with God, it's when we see things the way God sees it. The difference is God's always right. Your wife is usually right, but God's always right. When we have a problem with people, we should do all that's in our power to reconcile with our brothers and sisters. But sometimes all you can do is walk away. And if you have to walk away, Make sure you do it in your integrity of your heart, that you're like Jacob, that you have gone way beyond what is expected in your service and in your efforts to make things okay. And then you can have peace. You can forgive and move on with your life. If they want to hate you and smolder in it and waste their life doing that, that's their problem. You know, every moment you spend hating somebody, they own you. Every moment you spend hating somebody, they own that time. When you forgive them, I mean truly forgive them and truly pray for them, they have nothing on you anymore. You're free. You've moved on. There's other things. There's things ahead. Now, think of where Jacob's at. Laban's left. There's a line. He can't go that way anymore. It's forever closed to him. He's absolutely committed to go that way. But what's that way? Esau. I'm sure he was sitting there going, you know, what Laban has just done to me is exactly what I did to Esau before I left. And now I've got to face that. And for all he knew, Esau still wanted him dead. He was in a very precarious situation, to say the least. Where is he going to go? Well, I'll give you a hint. He's going to fight with God all night. Because this will be the night that Jacob changes. This is the time. He's nowhere to turn. Have you ever had that? Trouble behind, trouble ahead. Nowhere to turn. You can't go to the left or the right. You're absolutely trapped. There's just no way out. There's nothing to do but get on your knees and give up. But Jacob, even then, wouldn't get on his knees and give up. He would still scheme and try to figure out a way to pull this off on his own. But God had other plans for him. So read ahead, and we'll get there next week. But for now, don't envy. Forgive your enemies. If you have to, just walk away. But if you have to walk away, make sure you do so in the integrity of your heart, that you live your life in such a way that any accusation that anybody makes, you can just smile and bite your tongue. You don't even have to say a word in your own defense, because the way you live your life speaks for itself. And those accusations will look so silly to those who really know you that they won't be listened to. Let's stand. God, I pray that each one of us would have integrity in our heart. Something David spoke of, a wretched sinner. And yet, God, he spoke of standing before you in the integrity of his heart. And we, Lord, wretched sinners, ask for integrity of heart. Let us always live our life in a way that those around us cannot lay an accusation against us that is true. Lord, teach us to forgive and teach us when to move on and not look back. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Have a great week.